Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. On a, have we eaten everything yet? Weekend? And I guess big games. Were there big games? Those were big games, weren't they? I wasn't watching big games. Because my season hasn't started yet. The NBA conveniently announced that anybody who cared about pro basketball before ABC starts televising it is a sucker. Thanks for that, David Stern. Ladies and gentlemen, as the holiday season encroaches and approaches, if I don't have that backwards, it's time, I think, to bring this to your attention. There are many, many splendid shopping streets in London, England, but perhaps the grandest in terms of its architectural distinction and its centrality in the city is Regent Street. Beautiful curving street that goes from Piccadilly Circus, not a real circus, no clowns, to Oxford Circus, not a real circus, no clowns. And great, great stores. There's your Apple store right there. There's your, whatever. And it's so, being central and shopping-oriented, naturally it has historically among the best Christmas decorations in London, which is saying something. You know what I'm saying? I was saying something. Imagine my shock and chagrin and outrage, even though I'm not a citizen of London, but I still felt outraged just as a passerby last year when these beautiful Christmas decorations seemed to have been hijacked by promotion for a movie, some Christmas movie, some Hollywood stars pretending to be elves, because I guess Ricky Gervais had hired all the real dwarves. I know you can't say it as a noun anymore. You can say it as a verb. It dwarfed the budget deficits of previous. Really? Okay, then we'll say that. We don't say it little people. Anyway, Christmas decorations totally hijacked by promotion for a Christmas movie. I thought, well, that's a horrible one-off, but next year they'll put the... No, this year there's... Another Christmas movie has hijacked the Christmas decorations on Regent Street, and now it's not just London. A huge display featuring giant chipmunks from the Alvin and the Chipmunks film, Alvin and the Chipmunks 3, unveiled last Sunday at the Stockholm landmark, The Mushroom.
Shrooms.
It was met by outrage... with outrage by onlookers and city officials alike who were expecting traditional Christmas decorations. They had a permit for a tree and four Santas. The chipmunks will be gone before the end of the week, said Per's Anders Hedqvist.
Per's Hedqvist.
Of the traffic division at Stockholm City Council. The unveiling was supposed to be a large affair with the choir singing and speeches. However, the central display, placed on top of the mushroom-like concrete structure that gives the area its name, soon came in for criticism from those who expected Christmas decorations rather than advertising for an American children's film. I thought I was witnessing something historical, but all I feel is used and dirty, said one disgruntled onlooker. We have to regruntle her as soon as possible, or her holidays are. The city councilman who did the unveiling of the display was also shocked to be met with giant... I guess neon rodents or some kind of rodents, instead of the more traditional display she was expecting. I was very surprised at the unveiling of the display because in the application it was described as Christmas decorations, said Ulla Hamilton, city councilor for traffic. This was not at all in line with the permits we had issued. After a meeting between the Stockholm City Council Traffic Division and the organization responsible for the planning of Christmas lights and decorations around Stockholm, that's the Wolf Blitzer pronunciation, around Stockholm, they agreed that the organization had no permit for the Alvin display. It's not clear how the wires were crossed. However, we'll put it behind us, said one official, and continue onwards as soon as the chipmunks are gone. Let's put the chip back in Christmas, shall we? Hello, welcome to the show.
could drive me wild. They'd spy upon my every move until it drove me to despair. They told me what to wear. They told me not to cut my hair. But that's all over now. I had to tell them anyhow. It's my affair. Where I go and what I do is my affair. Oh, yeah. It's my affair. It's up to me.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, right near Lake Pontchartrain. Condi Rice doesn't know yet why the city flooded. Will somebody please tell her? I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this. She said on Face the Nation this morning, a big hurricane was unfolding. That's what they do. They unfold, baby. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of Le Show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Dick Ebersol, Jr. Sorry, Jim Ebersol, Jr. The Olympic Park Legacy Company has spent almost $2 million defending legal claims from two football teams, soccer teams we'd call them, more than its original legal fees for the entire process of taking bids for use of the Olympic Stadium after the Olympics. The legal bills were racked up defending the decision to award a team called West Ham preferred tenant status on the stadium, which was challenged by these other two football teams, Tottenham and Orient, on the grounds that a loan breach. Anyway, the Olympic Committee has walked away from the challenge when it abandoned the original deal, but not before spending almost $1 million on solicitors' fees and a further almost $1 million on barristers, both of which will be paid for by the taxpayer as soon as we figure out the difference between solicitors and barristers. And the former Olympics minister, now this is following up on the story about the possible Indian boycott of the Games, the former Olympics minister, Tessa Jowell, who worked closely with Sebastian Coe, now Lord Coe, to bring the Olympics to London, has called on him, Lord Coe, to cancel the sponsorship deal with Dow that is ticking the Indians off so badly, because Dow owns Union Carbide, which was responsible for the deadly Bhopal disaster in 1984. To cancel the deal with Dow before the controversy irreparably damages the standing of the 2012 Games. There's a point, she says, at which you have to say you cannot take the reputational risk. Lord Coe has 1 week to talk the Indian Olympic Association out of a boycott. On December 5th, athletes and sports bosses in India will meet to vote on walking out of the Olympic Games. Both the British and Indian governments will be asked to intervene to stave off the boycott. Dow is a core sponsor of the Olympics, a deal that Lord Coe can do nothing about the International Olympic Committee, but it is the London Games' recent awarding of a much smaller sponsorship to Dow, allowing it to wrap the stadium in company fabric and giving the chemical giant a global media profile next summer that has outraged some athletes and politicians in India. The chief minister of Madhya Pradesh, the state in which Bhopal is located, has demanded the Indian government support an athlete's boycott if the Dow deal continues. Other criticisms of Dow have fueled anger over its manufacturer of Agent Orange. In 2010, India's government blacklisted Dow AgroSciences for 5 years for bribing government officials. In 2007, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission accused Dow AgroSciences India of making improper payments. The pressure from inside India is mounting. Adam Sher Khan, an Olympic gold medal winner who became a politician, said the ongoing suffering in Bhopal made Dow's involvement in London very concerning. I am writing to Sonia Gandhi, he says, to put pressure on the British government to rethink its association with his company. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Now, news of Pakistan has decided not to ban text messages containing nearly 1,700 supposedly obscene words, following outrage from users and campaigners. earlier this month, the Pakistan Telecommunications Authority, the PTA, hey, they got good dinners, distributed a list of 1,695 words in English and Urdu, the national language, to operators, giving them 7 days to implement a filtering system. Hoodoo? Urdu. But the list was met with uproar, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Both at the attempt to censor messages and at the inclusion of many seemingly innocuous terms. Among the terms Pakistan was going to censor, block from being text messaged, were Jesus Christ, lotion, athlete's foot, robber, idiot, 420, and harder. I know, it's a fridge magnet poem. But on Tuesday this week, PTA spokesman Mohammed Yunus Khan said the authority would consult civil society representatives and mobile phone operators on refining a much shorter list of words. Maybe just idiot. No final decision has been taken, said Khan, a noted athlete's foot. And more news of AFPAC. The United States, despite warnings, has continued to transfer detainees to Afghan Intelligence Service custody even before the United Nations reported that there was systematic torture in Afghan intelligence agency detention centers. Top officials at the State Department, the CIA, and the U.S. military did receive multiple warnings about abuses at Department 124. There's the series. And other Afghan facilities, according to Afghan and Western officials with knowledge of the situation. U.S. Special Ops troops delivered detainees to Department 124. CIA officials regularly visited the facility. Hey, nice bars. Which was rebuilt last year with American money to interrogate high-level Taliban and Al-Qaeda suspects, according to Afghan and Western officials. Afghan officials said American officials never participated in the torture, but should have known about it. You just call me when the screaming's over, okay? But the prospect that U.S. officials failed to act on prior warnings raises questions about their compliance with a law known as the Leahy Amendment that prohibits the United States from funding units of foreign security forces where there's credible evidence that they have committed human rights abuses. Hey, Leahy! Even by the standards of Afghanistan's deeply, deeply troubled justice system. That's our ally. Department 124 stood out. With chilling detail, the United Nations recounted detainee stories of interrogators hanging them by their hands for hours, beating them with metal pipes, shocking them with electricity, and twisting their genitals until they passed out. Of the 28 detainees interviewed who'd spent time in the facility, 26 told the United Nations they had been tortured. According to a recent report, Department 124 was long sealed off from the outside world. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the UN, and other organizations concerned with human rights were barred by Afghan officials from monitoring conditions in Department 124. American officials frequently, however, went inside, according to Afghan officials and others familiar with the site. Special ops troops brought detainees there. CIA officials met with Department 124's leadership on a weekly basis. I'd recommend a slightly lower voltage, just for appearance's sake. Reviewed their interrogation reports and used the intelligence gleaned from interrogations to inform their operations, the officials said. The detainees' physical characteristics were entered into an American biometric database. They wore orange jumpsuits, as detainees do at U.S.-run prisons, at Bagram and elsewhere, but not at other Afghan prisons, and were sometimes hooded. They had hoodies. 17 detainees said they'd been transferred to the prison by international military forces. The United Nations found compelling evidence that those detainees were tortured once they arrived. In February of last year, the U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a cable later uncovered by WikiLeaks saying that human rights organizations point to a dubious distinction. We are the only detaining nation in Afghanistan that does not have a monitoring program. That is to say, the U.S., U.S., us. We. The State Department still has not implemented a monitoring program, according to the Washington Post. A proposal to start one was given to the Afghan government a few months ago. No agreement has been reached. They got other fish to fry. News of AFPAC. It's AFPACular. Yes, I just thought of that. And I'm not proud. Not proud at all. But now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will be so kind, let's listen to The Worm. It's a slow worm. It's a slow-forming worm. But here comes.
Soft, listen to the worm.
You know what? I've reconsidered. Listen to the worm. I am proud of AFPACTacular. A new study suggests that the rate of global warming from the doubling of atmospheric carbon dioxide may be less than most than the most dire estimates of some previous studies. In fact, may be less severe than projected by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Authors of this new study, funded by the National Science Foundation's Paleoclimate Program and published online this week in the journal Science, say global warming is real and that increases in atmospheric CO2 will have serious impacts. However, the most draconian projections of temperature increases from the doubling of CO2 are unlikely. Here's why. Many previous climate sensitivity studies, they say, have looked at the past only from 1850 through today and have not fully integrated paleoclimate data, especially on a global scale. When you reconstruct sea and land surface temperatures from the peak of the last ice age 21,000 years ago, which is referred to as the last glacial maximum, and compare it with climate model simulations of that period, you get a much different picture, according to Andreas Schmittner, an OSU, Oregon State University researcher. If these paleoclimate constraints apply to the future, as predicted by our model, the results imply less probability of extreme climate change than previously thought. That's the good news. Now, the other news, the recent loss of sea ice in the Arctic is greater than any natural variation in the past 1.5 millennia. But that's not paleomillennia. This now, according to a Canadian study, direct information about sea ice coverage can be obtained by consulting fossils, or counting fossils, of sea ice dwellers, such as microorganisms called dinoflagellates. Head and Shoulders helps fight those. When they die, their bodies become part of the sediment on the seafloor. Taking cores of the sediment can therefore provide historical information about the sea ice cover. They're very difficult to collect in the Arctic because of the sea ice. That's why information... That's what they concluded. And a common argument against the global warming hypothesis is that the climate has always varied. Temperatures rise sometimes, and this is perfectly natural. However, Svante Björk, a climate researcher at Lund University in Sweden,
got a lot of Swedes on the show today, don't we?
Has now shown that global warming, simultaneous warming events in the northern and southern hemispheres, have not occurred in the past 20,000 years. That's nearly paleo. That's as far back as it's possible to analyze with sufficient precision to compare with modern developments. Björk's study thus goes 14,000 years farther back in time than previous studies have done. What is happening today, he says, is unique from an historical, geological perspective. News of the Worm, ladies and gentlemen, won't you? Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The superbugs among us are proliferating. Researchers have discovered an underworld of genetic exchange among bacteria, one more vast than previously imagined, reports Wired. A comparison of thousands of bacterial genomes from around the world found genes flowing easily between species separated by hundreds, even thousands of miles. Whether the bacteria were related or not didn't matter. That's fascinating on its own, but disturbing when the genes involved could turn pathogenic and turn pathogenic genes into drug-resistant superbugs. We should have done this study and asked these questions 5 years ago, said microbiologist Eric Alm of MIT. The significance, he says, was off the charts. Well, man, that's off the hook. Bacteria readily exchange DNA between closely related species, much less frequently across unrelated lineages. But this is new. So there you go. That could mean more antibiotic-resistant bacteria, but there'll be more about that, ladies and gentlemen, coming up as I read the trades for you. But first, some trades involving the radio business. A Florida congresswoman wants American Public Media, this is from Current, the trade publication of public radio, public broadcasting. A Florida congresswoman wants American Public Media and other media outlets to stop airing underwriting spots and advertising by Allianz, a German insurer that did business with the Nazis. Allianz is one of two corporate underwriters of
Prairie Home Companion, don't you know?
Republican Representative Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, who heads the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, is backing a bill that would allow Holocaust survivors to sue the insurer and has launched a letter-writing campaign aimed at blocking it from advertising in America until it pays off all Holocaust survivors' life insurance claims. During World War II, according to the Miami Herald, Allianz insured concentration camp facilities. Now, that's thoughtful. The Nazis thought to insure the camps. See? Thorough. As well as they sent money to the Nazis instead of to rightful Jewish beneficiaries. Holocaust survivors have been raising questions about Allianz's sponsorship of Prairie Home Companion. American Public Media told survivors to contact Allianz directly to discuss their concerns.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Treblinka, hasn't it?
And what does NPR know about its listeners? According to NPR research, there's an endless stream of fun facts that they distribute on their Twitter stream. NPR News listeners were 94% more likely to have signed a petition in the past 12 months. More fun facts about supposed NPR listeners. 15% of NPR listeners view their cell phone as an extension of their personality. They're 20% more likely than the average adult to buy Godiva chocolate. They're 73% more likely than the average adult to view radio as the most trusted medium. Radio? They are 27% more likely than the average adult to own a bread-making machine. They're 42% more likely to drive a car with manual transmission. How does NPR use the information? Says NPR, the primary purpose of these data is corporate sponsorship underwriting sales. But many in the newsroom continue to eat the data up. The information helps us know where our listeners are on the technology adoption curve, bread-making machines, which can then guide our thinking about where we should invest our resources in the digital space. I would not say, says a spokesperson, this information drives strategic programming decisions. Indeed, instead it can help to clarify the audience mindset. Given the intimacy of the radio medium, people like to paint a clear picture of the person on the other end of the line. You have a bread-making machine? I think you do. And urgent action is needed to accelerate the approved licensing process for new antibiotics to avoid an unprecedented crisis, according to nursingpractice.com. A group of scientists and medical experts have warned the British government they face a ticking time bomb over the lack of modern antibiotics due to increased resistance to infections. And another trade publication, porknetwork.com, says scientists at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada, found that antibiotic resistance has been around for tens of thousands of years. Breakthrough came after studying bacterial DNA extracted from soil frozen in 30,000-year permafrost from the Yukon. Research findings published in Nature, according to Pork Network, show antibiotic resistance as a natural phenomenon that predates the modern clinical antibiotic use. Where were they finding the antibiotics to become resistant to those bacteria back then, you might ask? Researchers discovered antibiotic-resistant genes existed beside genes that encoded DNA for ancient life, such as mammoths, as well as plants only found in that locality during the last interglacial period. Antibiotics are part of the natural ecology of the planet. So when we think we have developed some drug that won't be susceptible to resistance, we are completely kidding ourselves, says Jerry Wright, scientific director of the Institute for Infectious Disease Research. These things are part of our natural world. We need, therefore, to be incredibly careful in how we use them. Microorganisms have figured out a way of how to get around them well before we even figured out how to use them. And the contrary, unquote, Jerry. Might make you think twice about feeding antibiotics to cattle just to fatten them up, wouldn't it? Just a question I ask when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature, this broadcast.
She thought the only way out was the only way in. On some days, hiding from all that was frightening made such good sense in the simplest of ways. People would scare her. She dared to be strong in their eyes. She seemed above it all. Laughing and carefree, she'd go home and cry through the night. Or stare at the wall. When you're not that strong, when your mind tells you to hide away. Stories of people who walk from this world, not heard of again. Strangers to neighbors who say they were always such fun, not ones to complain. When your wiring's wrong, when your fear tells you to hide away.
This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
It seems as though there was a big, I know it was Black Friday this week, but it seems like there was a big sale on pepper spray that I missed because it seemed to be used all over this week. You know the story about the octogenarian woman who was pepper sprayed, I believe, in New York at the Occupy Wall Street encampment before that was dispersed. And then the competitive shopper, as she was described, at Walmart in California. Now, I hate when people do that, and I did it. California is a state of 30 million people. Be more specific, babe. Okay. I believe it was Southern California. I'm going out to California. Really? Bakersfield? And finally, of course, and most notoriously, the incident last weekend at UC Davis. I know UC Davis. University of California, Davis. At which several Occupy protesters seated and not moving and not doing anything were pepper sprayed in an iconic image by Lieutenant John Pike of the UC Davis campus police. It's not like what the campus police were like when I was going to UC, I'll tell you. But you know, there's been a trend, I guess, in the militarization of the police in the United States. Something I'm proud to say L.A. started a long time ago, but now it's spread all over the place. Even to UC Davis, an ag campus, if ever there were one. If ever there was one. And the photograph of Lieutenant Pike spraying, sort of almost ostentatiously, or Austin, Texasly at least, spraying these sitting protesters, one of those photos became almost instantaneously iconic. Traveled around the internet and became, as it's known now, an internet meme, meaning that a lot of people, the host of the show included, photoshopped it into other situations. The lieutenant and another officer of the UC Davis campus police have been suspended with pay, mit pay, pending an investigation by former L.A. and New York police chief Bill Bratton. When you want to investigate cops, ask a cop. But it just strikes me that, you know, okay, it's one thing to become an internet meme. It's another to have your own song. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And on the topic we were just discussing, UC Davis Chancellor Linda Katehi has apologized to students and faculty after those campus police officers pepper sprayed a group of student protesters. Quote, "I am here to apologize," she told hundreds of students and faculty who gathered for a rally on the campus. "I feel horrible for what happened. I don't want to be chancellor of the university we had on Friday," she told the crowd. "Okay, then. Oh, I see. Our university has to be better than it is, and we all need all of the community to come together to do that. We need to work together. I'm telling you today, you don't have to. I know you may not believe anything that I'm telling you today, and you don't have to. It is my responsibility to earn your trust." She left the podium the chance of resign. And also apologizing, Robert Bergoglio, Chancellor of the University of California, at Berkeley.
"I've been hearing from many of you about police procedures on our campus, and I want to share my thoughts directly with you. I sincerely apologize for the events of November 9th at UC Berkeley, and extend my sympathies to any of you who suffered an injury during these protests. As chancellor, I take full responsibility for these events, and will do my very best to ensure that this does not happen again."
Thank you. And an organizer for Occupy Des Moines says he'll no longer... Occupy Des Moines? That is interesting. He says he will no longer speak for the group after his arrest on charges during a recent bank protest. David Goodner apologized for the actions that led to his arrest at a Wells Fargo branch. He was arrested on possession of marijuana and drug paraphernalia. A pipe, babe. The arrest came after Goodner entered the bank to read a protest letter and refused to leave when asked. Where do these kids come up with this stuff? That was me coughing. A harried U.S. Airways passenger has complained he was forced to stand throughout a 7-hour nonstop flight because a morbidly obese co-passenger took up half his seat. Arthur Berkowitz said his neighbor weighing over, what's 181 kilograms? Why do I get these? Said it was impossible to get into his seat. He was the last one to board, and as he walked down to me, he said, "I really want to apologize. I'm your worst nightmare." Borowitz claims the flight attendants admitted their gate agent had made an error in allowing the passenger to board without having bought two seats. U.S. Airways has since apologized for the regrettable incident. After a huge backlash, alcoholic beverage company Vodka yanked a New York billboard featuring a dog wearing a yarmulke with the words, quote, "Christmas quality, Hanukkah pricing," unquote. The advertisement drew strong criticism on the internet and from the Anti-Defamation League, which called it crude and offensive. The vodka company pulled the ad and apologized. "Although rarely serious, we apologize to anyone we may have offended through our holiday campaign and removing our billboard immediately," the company said in a statement. Egyptian generals offered an unusual apology this week for the killings of protesters in Tahrir Square, but rejected the demonstrators' demand for an immediate end to military rule. Jimmy Fallon tweeted, "I'm honored that Michelle Bachmann was on our show yesterday, and I'm so sorry about the intro mess. I really hope she comes back." That wasn't enough for Representative Bachmann, who demanded that NBC apologize for what happened when the band on the Jimmy Fallon show, The Roots, played a song called "Lion Ass Bitch." Is that what it's called? They have songs called things like that. Yes, apparently they do. So she demanded an apology from NBC, and you know what? She got one. Isn't that wild? NBC apologized to Michelle Bachmann. The show's dropped. Yeah, that's right. Bachmann received a letter from Doug Vaughn, NBC Senior Vice President for Special Programs and Late Night, that apologized for what happened. So, everything's okay. She'll come back, she said. She'd be glad to come back if they introduce her with, you know, a nice song about a nice lady. NASCAR Sprint Cup driver Kurt... Oh, there, a Sprint got their name into this. Kurt Busch has apologized for verbally abusing ESPN reporter Jerry Punch during a race at Miami Speedway. A video shot by a fan and posted on YouTube, see, there you go, shows Busch calling Punch an expletive. Busch was also caught during the live broadcast making an obscene gesture inside his car as he drove his wounded Dodge into the garage. Busch blamed his behavior on his poor showing. He finished 14th. In my frustration with the loss of my transmission early in the race, I let my emotions get the better of me. I regret having done this and apologize to the sponsors of Penske Racing, to NASCAR, its fans, in the media, and particular, Dr. Jerry Punch. Penske Racing also apologized and said the incident was being reviewed internally. Uh-oh, inside Penske. Turkey's prime minister has for the first time officially apologized for the mass killing of Kurds in an uprising 80 years ago. The statement is seen by some as a groundbreaking first step in the country facing up to its difficult past. Others see it as more to do with politics. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan said if there's a need for apology on behalf of the state regarding the killing of nearly 14,000 Kurds in a rebellion in the 1920s, quote, I will apologize, and I am apologizing. It's like he was conjugating apologizing. Is conjugating still allowed in public? I don't know. Things change, you know, standards change so fast. But wait, there's more. There's always more. And then there's no more. But now there's more. Dateline Darwin, Australia, an Australian man who spent 3 days in jail on allegations of smuggling drugs in his hair care products has received more than $98,000 in compensation, an apology from the Customs and Border Protection Agency. The chief executive officer, they say, has apologized to Mr. Perry for the consequences that followed his referral by Customs Border Protection. They alleged that he had liquid ecstasy in his Pantene. I'm not making that up. How could I make that up? Georgia Tech coach Paul Johnson, whose oft unfettered tongue and unwillingness to back down to rival Georgia have earned him the admiration of Tech fans, apologized for a poor choice of words on his radio show this week. A caller, presumably a Georgia Bulldogs fan, came on the air and said, hello, hello, then began barking before either hanging up or being cut off. Johnson responded, he just got off from Walmart. Then he said, anybody who calls into a radio show and barks is either retarded or doesn't have a life. After the show, Johnson said he meant his response as a joke, but it was a poor choice of words on my part, and I sincerely apologize. It was not my intention to offend anyone. Unquote. Advocates for people with mental disabilities have campaigned against the use of the word retard or retarded. But flame retardant? All right, then. And a retardando in music? Is that still good? Scottish students affiliated with the British Conservative Party have apologized for burning an effigy of Barack Obama. Brazil has suspended the exploration activities of Chevron in its territory following an oil spill off Rio de Janeiro State. Chevron's top official in the country did apologize to lawmakers for the incident, which could jeopardize its access to huge new offshore oil fields. Good reason to apologize, then, if you ask me. And you didn't. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The ramifications of the economic crisis continue to multiply and ramify. Belgium got downgraded this week by the ratings agencies. Not Nielsen, you know, the financial ratings agencies. And when they downgrade Belgium, you know, something's happening, Mr. Jones, because that's North Europe, you know. The periphery, as they call it over there, your Italy's, your Portugal's, your Greece's, your Ireland's, they're used, you know, they're accustomed to that. But Belgium, that's right next to the Netherlands and Germany, see? They got downgraded. There's continuing pressure on the European countries are paying record high prices to sell their bonds. Germany had what most observers call a disastrous day trying to sell bonds, didn't sell many of them. Buy bonds, folks. It helps the war. Oh, sorry. So it's Europe, and of course the predictions are that if the crisis becomes as disastrous as some of the worst case scenarios, including from Eve Smith, whom we've heard on this program, that it will spread to the United States. Europe is no more contained than the subprime mortgage market in 2007 was contained. In the midst of all this, the British government, which bought up two banks in the heat of the crisis in 2008, a bank called Northern Rock was one of them. The British government sold it off this week, or a week ago, I believe, to Sir Richard Branson, who, after fooling around with music and airlines and all that stuff, has finally realized what he's interested in. The British government sold a bank called Northern Rock to a company called Virgin Money. But they only sold the good part of the bank with actually good assets and deposits. The British government retains ownership of, that's right, the bad bank.
Assets. Keep the dollars in your closets. Cause we don't take care of deposits. We're the bad bank. Oh, we don't mean to be a boaster, but we're the bad bank. We'll even make you give us a toaster. Might as well indulge your cravings, cause we'll piss away your savings. We're the bad bank. We make you pine for loan sharking. Such a bad bank. Don't even offer free parking.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, just one nuclear note this week. A nuclear power plant in Sweden.
There's that Sweden again.
Was put out of action for 7 months at a cost of, $200 million after a vacuum cleaner was mistakenly left inside its containment vessel during tests. Vacuum cleaner set it on fire, you see. Clean, safe. It's clean, safe. Well, it's clean because there was a vacuum cleaner in there. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on the internet at two different locations whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available on your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast at harryshearer.com. And it'd be just like having no Christmas decorations if you got to put a movie ad in it, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. We'd love you to listen to the show, me, on your local station, your local public radio station. But if for any reason you can't, live streams from around the country available all day at publicradiofan.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to the ever more famous Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM here in New Orleans for helping to make today's show possible. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the 50,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.